Welcome to Daisy Update for December 3rd, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, just a two-man crew, but we've got a bunch of news this week.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of things got dates announced for it at the, I think it's the PC Gamer Show.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a handful of things there that got announced that were pretty interesting, as well as some other stuff. We know the exact date when the first trailer for the new GTA will arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be fun to see. It's not during the Game Awards show.
Nope.
So, like we expected, they didn't need that. So,
nope.
That's good. And we got some other stuff. I got three games here decided they want to launch in the bloodbath that is February.
Yep.
For whatever reason, people are still doing that.
Yep. Yes, they are.
We got level 5 news because they've delayed a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's fun. And then we got some weird news, development news.
Mm-hmm.
A game that was rumored to be happening got leaked.
Yeah.
Not the way that you think it got leaked.
Nope.
And Bethesda's doing something weird on Steam.
Yeah.
Apparently, I've been doing that for a while, but kind of came to light around a certain game they released pretty recently.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get to all that stuff, but for now, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some Chance of Sinnar.
Mm-hmm.
That is Chance, like C-H-A-N-T-S, mm-hmm. and Sinnar is S-E-N-N-A-A-R. It is a language-based puzzle adventure game. Where you are sort of this robed and hooded figure that is going around these areas. You're running into a language that you do not know, at least as the player does not know. Mm-hmm. Seeing these glyphs, as they call them, are these sort of language, like, I don't know about letters, maybe more like what the Japanese have with like katakana and that kind of stuff, where they have a symbol that represents a word and you're kind of learning them from reading signs and talking to people who say things. That's why I think it's the player that doesn't understand versus the character that does, because otherwise the character talking to people that they don't know the language would not make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is kind of one of those, games like Return of the Oberdin or Case of the Golden Idol that are games where you're very much investigating these areas for all these clues and context to try to figure out like what these words mean, these glyphs mean.
Mm-hmm.
And it lets you write down like up to 20 characters of what you think that word is, and you're not trying to put down the right word in that sense. Occasionally your character will bring up their journal and like draw down, you know, actions or people or, you know, concepts or buildings or stuff like that. Things that represent some of these words that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're trying to match those based on the notes you've taken in these words for these glyphs and try to match them to the to what you're seeing on the pages of this journal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something you can kind of game a little bit if you know one or two of the things. You can just sit there and try out the combinations of the rest. But I recommend not trying to do that as much as you can, because there's a lot of fun in, because you're not always when you get these options to do stuff, you don't necessarily have the clues or the knowledge yet of, or even the glyphs yet to fill in there. So it's worth not trying to just play it in a very gamey sense of just trying all the combinations you can think of, because also the different languages that it puts at, it only immerses you in one at a time, but it behooves you to kind of learn those languages a bit. Not necessarily in like a fluency kind of way, but more Sometimes they have structure to their designs to be like, especially the first language you get that is has that kind of stuff where these common elements are like, oh, this is something you use when relating to people, types of people kind of thing. You see this that is used that relates all these things. So that when you see, you know, it's relating different kinds of people, you're like, okay, it's got to be, you know, amongst these things. And based on like, you know, signs I've seen with these glyphs on it and the drawings that are on there, the art, you can like relate like what it's potentially saying, that kind of stuff. Or, you know, what people gestures they're making or things they're asking you to do or potentially just saying. You can kind of glean that stuff from the context of the word of the glyphs and such that are put together in lines, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. So it's a lot of logic there that is really rewarding once you kind of figure out like those things that tie certain things together, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I think it's 6 different languages you're going to run into from different groups of people. And it's sort of like each stage is a different language, essentially, as you're doing a bit in each of these areas to figure out. And you'll know you're done because you've figured out all the meanings for the glyphs for one area. And that generally means that you're probably at the end of the area and can move on to the next one. That kind of stuff. And I'm on the 3rd area, which I think is a form of Arabic the way it is, because it has like a solid line through the bottom part of all the glyphs. So that kind of connects it together. And it looks at least similar to Arabic in the ways that I've seen it, but I don't, you know, that for sure. It could just be like something that's influenced by that style of language. But I'm going through this area and it's, I'm just getting a lot of text and not necessarily so much in the way of clues. So you're going to have to just go around and like add stuff to, like every new glyph you see, it'll notify you like, hey, you should pull up your journal. This will add it to there as another glyph. And then maybe, you know, if you're getting it from dialogue that characters are saying, when you go to your journal, it'll show you those lines so you can further like dissect like what is, you know, potential clues you might have, words that you know, notes that you put down show up in those as like a highlight over it. Of like, so if you're trying to piece together what it might be saying, you might find a way for, you know, adding more context when you see it in other sentences and being like, this probably doesn't work, or maybe this is kind of getting there, but maybe I gleam the wrong meaning for this, that kind of thing. And yeah, some of these languages have like modifiers to them. So like the first language, they double up glyphs when they are pluralizing it, whereas others may have a specific glyph for pluralizing words or terms, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff that's really neat. And then outside of that, there's some fairly basic adventure game kind of stuff going on. So that's when you have some puzzles to solve, you might have to go and find an object somewhere that helps you solve it. You know, just some basic stuff of wanting to explore the areas and look for things that you can potentially pick up. I just got into an area in the 3rd area. A building in the 3rd chapter that just had tools in it. And that's when I realized like, oh, it only lets you hold one item at a time. But this is the first time in the game that I've seen so far in the about 6 hours or so I've played so far that I've had more than one thing at a time. So I feel like it's going to be a place that I'm going to just keep coming back when I'm like, oh, I need this thing. So I got to go back all the way back here to figure that out. And maybe the one thing that kind of sticks out so far is that there is stealth to this game. Mm-hmm. Because it's dealing with kind of some religious themes and such in the hierarchy of these people here, as just kind of the lowest tier of people, you are just like a commoner kind of person, at least as far as I know right now. Your guy is not allowed in some areas, so you have to kind of do this very kind of rudimentary stealth stuff, and you kind of get a highlight of where you can have your character go, and it'll show you that for areas where you're in hiding, so you're going to have to be careful with that stuff. There's not been a ton of it, though. Mm-hmm. I've had one area where I had to impersonate one of the groups of people with the outfits or the sort of armor I took on to emulate what they had, but if I got too close to the people I was emulating, they would have their like suspicion meter filling up kind of stuff. But otherwise I could, you know, roam around as much as I wanted, kind of stuff. So I did find a puzzle that seems like either I just did not glean the solution from it, but it gave me 4 solutions for things to do, like patterns to put into this thing. And I entered the 3 wrong ones first, and that like alerts soldiers to come in, and they would beat you up, and then you just respawn mm-hmm. in that area. It auto-saves every time you enter an area, so you don't ever really lose too much progress in this game, so that's at least a good thing. There's no manual save, it's just based on the auto-save, so it seems like your best bet if you have any potential risk. It'll tell you, like, oh, you saved, you know, less than a minute ago, and you're like, okay, I probably haven't done anything worthwhile, but that's maybe another thing to keep an eye out on. But yeah, the stealth stuff's kind of just weird. Maybe the one thing where it's like, it fits into this game kind of thematically, because you're kind of sneaking into these areas, and as somebody that does not look like the other people there, as mm-hmm. far as how you dress, especially in this third area, but nobody seems to care, as far as like, because they're all dressing, you know, with like masks and, you know, almost kind of like Roman or maybe Arabic kind of robes kind of stuff, whereas you got this big hooded thing on, where it's like, well, these people don't seem to give a shit about whatever you are, because they're freely talking to you and all that. So it's a very cool game. Mm-hmm. I got it during the main thing I bought during the Steam Black Friday sale. And it's been very fun so far, so I'm looking forward to putting more time into it and all that. It's on the consoles as well as a PC. Cool. I assume you just have to do, you know, the typing with the console keyboard mm-hmm. kind of stuff, but otherwise it should be pretty fine. I think you're probably just controlling the character directly, but maybe you're dealing with a cursor, but I think there's demos on all the consoles it's on, so that's something to check out for that. Okay. But that's been a lot of fun. Really impressive game. The other game I'm playing, SteamWorld Build. This is on, I think, at least PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. Mm-hmm. This is the newest game in the series. It's sort of a city builder that I think fits in, I think it says between SteamWorld Dig 1 and 2, where this father and daughter in their like weird steampunk you know, robot sort of traveling across the desert, almost like the way people explored the Western US back in the day when it was unexplored as far as the white people were concerned. They run into this weird module thing that's, I think, is the bad guy from either the first or the second Dig game, but it's sort of like a personality sphere from like the Portal games, mm-hmm. That kind of thing. But it's talking to these robots and kind of convincing them that they need to set up a town near where this where these potential old relics are at, and I'm assuming it's going to potentially be some sinister thing, but for now mm-hmm. I've just been kind of building out this town, and it's the nice thing is, compared to like a City Skylines or anything like that, it is not as hardcore of a city builder as those games. Mm-hmm. The ground where you're laying stuff is all in a grid fashion, so you're not going to have, like in City Skylines, I would always find out like, oh, this road I built somehow was, you know, like slightly not straight. So trying to build, you know, houses. There's a point where that becomes unfeasible kind of thing. This, it's all pretty easy to lay down road and put buildings in and all that. And I believe it does have the ability to, like, randomize the layout of the area to some degree, so that you're not just able to have, like, the perfect build, essentially. But otherwise, it's not super complicated. You get, you know, you build out your town to mine certain resources or, you know, create certain resources. And then that leads you to opening up more stuff, more buildings to mine, you know, other resources, or turn resources you already make into other things that you need, that kind of stuff. And the town folk that you have,
mm-hmm.
have requirements for their sort of 100% happiness, and that'll evolve as you get more stuff open up. And so you're kind of wanting to build that stuff to keep them happy, because that 100% happiness for a residence means you have more of the workers or engineers or whatever you're building those houses for or upgrading them to. You get the maximum amount of people out of that, robots out of that, to join your workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of continually managing that stuff for that. So along the way, every few minutes, like 5-10 minutes, I think it is, you get a train rolling in. This is where you can buy new stuff. These are like items that build up stats for different production buildings, or for your different groups down in the mine, or you can just buy straight up like gems or gold or stuff like that. As well as if you have excess of certain resources, you can sell them with the train every so often. It'll sell that when it has the amount for that stuff. So you can, it doesn't let it be as granular as I want it to be. It's like, mm-hmm. I was like potentially selling like most of my wood if I could. But it requires 50, which is the max I can hold at once. And so I would just get every so often like, oh, you don't have enough material, so we can't sell your, you know, fulfill your trade order kind of thing. And it's like, okay, whatever. I wish I could have made it like 20 instead of 50, but it's whatever. You can't necessarily dictate what you're selling it for, that kind of thing. Sometimes it's for cash or gold, that kind of stuff. There's not as much flexibility on that stuff. So yeah, it's a little bit weird in some of those ways, but for the most part, it's a pretty fun game. One of these that's is probably going to be the first of these city builders that I'm going to get into and potentially, you know, beat and get to the end of the story part of it. They do let you set up, like, you know, potentially endless stuff. Is like when I started up the first map I was on, the tutorial and the story were things that you could toggle off. So I think if you have already seen the story for that area, you can just kind of skip it and just do the building stuff. And yeah, the other fun part is when you get the mine open and you kind of build up down there to dig all that out. So you're laying down floor that expands how many, you know, workers you have down there of the different types, as different ones have different abilities for stuff they can mine, as well as various other tools and stuff you can build down there to expand your ability to mine stuff, or you know, see what's around you, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Though you do have to worry about the mine collapsing, so you have to put up wood posts every so often. It'll even highlight the specific areas where you should put them. So I probably have more than I should, because I was just laying them down for a bit until I realized it was showing you the specific areas that were potentially weak. But if you don't, I think rocks will rain down from the ceiling and knock out robots if they're nearby, or just create a mess, that kind of stuff. So nothing too complicated, but I believe it. I am building up to the point where there will be the, like, sinister enemies that spawn in, and I'll have to deal with having, you know, attack robots, defending my mining robots, that kind of stuff. I think that's the thing that they were teasing at the end of the demo, what they put out earlier this year. So, looking forward to put some more time into that. Been enjoying that a lot. So that SteamWorld build on at least PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. It's on Game Pass as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And the last game I've been playing is My Suica. This is a Steam game that is a clone of the Suica game on Switch, which is a sort of physics fruit matching game that's released on the Switch in Japan like 2 years ago, but they finally released an English version for the rest of the world to play. And with the help of VTubers playing it, they became the like best-selling game that was a Nintendo game on the eShop for the past couple of months. And so people on Steam have been making clones of it. I have one here that's called, I think, Watermelon Game. It just has like the shittiest paint, MS Paint art for these different fruits. That's
a
free game, but pretty solid on that front. This is a 99-cent game from a developer that has pretty solid art to it and all that. And they, and there's like Steam forum. They're answering lots of questions about the game, things to improve and all that. And as well as people asking like, oh, is this the original one of these? And they're like, no, here's, you know, they ended up looking up like what the earliest one was. And I think it was Suica game or maybe a random mobile game that nobody's been able to figure out, but you know, being very open, it's not the original game. That's a clone and all that. And, you know, even responding to some of the negative reviews that have issues with how the game kind of performs at launch, that kind of stuff. I've been responding to some of that stuff for feedback stuff. So nothing really too complicated. It's 99 cents. Pretty solid. The physics are a bit different than the Switch games, which is not a huge surprise. But it provides its own little bit of challenge in not being a 100% clone. So that's been fine with me. So yeah, pretty solid. But that's been pretty much it for me. So what have you been playing, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I recently started playing Rollerdrome because I wanted to take advantage of my my Game Pass subscription. And, you know, it's one of the recent games they put out for December. And basically what the game is it's basically Jet Set Radio with guns. It's very reminiscent of like one of those old sort of cheesy 70s sci-fi movies that's like a dystopia where there's like a blood sport involved. And in this case, you're essentially playing a person who is on roller skates in like a roller skating course, whose the object of the game is you were armed originally with just a pair of dual wielding pistols. Eventually you also get like a shotgun and a grenade launcher and so on and so on. And you're basically given the job of going out into these courses and basically killing all of the other enemies that you come in contact with. And in these cases, the enemies are what they call house players, either individuals that come in various categories. There's like a melee house player, the basic one who tries to hit you with a spiked baseball bat. Then you go up to like snipers and warheads, who are guys with like rocket launchers that fire heat-seeking missiles. And then there's a guy who has like a laser and stuff like that, basically. And the what's unique about it is that, like I said, it's Jet Set Radio with guns. And in this case, what that means is that there's a big part of the game that involves you having to like do stunts and tricks and whatever, because that's how you actually regain all of your ammo. So like, for example, like if you run out of ammo for any particular weapon that you're using, you can, for example, you can do like rail grinding, and that'll slowly build up your ammo back to a point, not completely. Or you can like do flips or, you know, grabs, that kind of thing, and you'll get your all of your stuff back. Of course, that it doesn't necessarily make it as easy as it sounds. The reality is, the reality is because there's just so much that's coming at you at any given time. Like the game, like it starts off with like snipers, for example. The game will let you know that, you know, you're in a sniper sight by like giving you like this red stripe that's pointing at you. And, you know, if you time it right, you can not only dodge it, but you can do like a perfect dodge, like just as they're about to pull the trigger, and that'll actually get you some of your ammo back. But there's a lot of those guys that will show up pretty soon once you get into like the quarterfinals. And on top of that, you've also got a bunch of the dudes that fire the rockets, and those rockets are heat seekers, and, you know, they will not stop following you until they come in contact with something. And a lot of times that means that, you know, they'll hit the ground or something, but they can take a pretty good chunk out of your health. And then there's the security guard dudes. These are guys that have like riot shields, and they use like proximity mines as like their primary weapon. But they can also hit you with your shield and basically take out half of your health energy in like one hit. So the game is fun, but it is definitely not easy. But on top of that, I've also been playing Remnant 2. I played the original Remnant a while back and found it quite enjoyable. It's basically Dark Souls with guns, which weirdly enough works extremely well. But I haven't really gotten that far into it, so I'll probably have to talk about it more once I do. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news here. Mm-hmm. And for a new month here, we have some new offerings for your subscription services. For PlayStation Plus, we have three new games for your people that have Essential, Extra, or Premium, all the tiers.
Mm-hmm.
Three new games. I think all of these, let's see. Okay, no. One is PS5 only. The other two are PS5 and PS4.
Mm-hmm.
But all pretty solid games. We got LEGO 2K Drive for PS5 and PS4.
Mm-hmm.
This is the 2K LEGO sort of Forza Motorsport, or not Forza, Forza Horizon game.
Mm-hmm.
Very clearly kind of doing that, but with the LEGO touch to it, which everything I heard is pretty decent for that stuff, for being able to build out these vehicles with, you know, basic blueprints, but also being able to add to them to do extra stuff, I guess, if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Though being a 2K game means there's lots of microtransactions to it, which is probably not great for a kids focused kind of game like this.
Uh-huh.
That's, you know, they want all the money, but people would like to, you know, have bought this and have a means for letting kids play without having it, you know, be money grubbing and all that. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing I've heard that's disappointing about it. But it seems to have at least cross play in it, so that you can play with people on other platforms if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty solid. But it seems like it should be a pretty decent one of those open world racing games with online stuff to it. So there you go for that.
Mm-hmm.
Also for PS5 and PS4, there's Power Wash Simulator.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this is my game of the year from last year, not necessarily mm-hmm. for the consoles, because the controllers, by default, is kind of a bit of a slow and clunky way to play the game.
Oh, yeah.
I think playing it with a mouse and keyboard is much faster, much more fitting for this game.
Mm-hmm.
But they did add gyro support for the PS5, PS4, and Switch versions. That helps a good bit. Doesn't necessarily solve all the issues, but makes it a more easily accessible kind of way of playing it. This is a game where I had to redo the entire control scheme almost to make it fit everything that I thought was essential controls for a controller. Which meant I left like half of the, or not half, maybe a handful of the actions off of it completely, like switching between the different nozzles. Mm-hmm. I think I just had forward nozzle because it's no point having another button dedicated to going back, because you can also just have a button that lets you manage that stuff separately if you need to. So, mm-hmm. yeah. But the campaign is really well done. It tells an interesting story, especially if you're even replaying it, knowing the things that happen. You can kind of read the text messages and glean all the details and notice things in the environment of, you know, people that are mentioned, you know, earlier or later in the story, and see like, oh, that they did something here for some reason, you know, left a note or something. You know, that kind of stuff that adds to the story, as well as all the free content they've added post-launch with a bunch of the extra side jobs they've added and free DLC for Final Fantasy VII and Tomb Raider stuff. As well as the paid DLC they put out with SpongeBob SquarePants and Back to the Future that are also really good. And so, yeah, it's a very good one of those. Really good game to check out. And, yeah, even supports co-op multiplayer if you want to clean with friends and just chill and have fun. It's a really good kind of chill game. So there you go. Power Wash Simulator, definitely worth checking out. And the last game here just for PS5 is Sable. This is sort of an exploration adventure game where you are taking control of Sable, who is on her gilding, just or gliding, a sort of rite of passage that kind of sends her on a quest, an adventure to explore the deserts and, you know, areas around the her homeland kind of thing. Has a really great art style to it, a lot of fun kind of chill experiences to have around the world. And yeah, great arts, great art style and soundtrack by Japanese Breakfast. Just adds a great experience. So definitely one, also one to check out there. So, and those will be available on Tuesday, the 5th, I think it is. Yeah, December 5th. So you can check those out. So pretty solid lineup there. And let's see, for Game Pass, I believe this is going to be largely what's left for the month, because I think they're only doing one update, but maybe they'll do another. I don't know. We'll see for that. And I imagine the Game Awards will have some more announcements on that front. But yeah, for stuff that's available now, Remnant from the Ashes for console and PC. That's the not the first game, the second game in the series. Remnant 2 is the third game in a series. Because there is... I forget what the first game is called. But yeah, it's... That was a VR game originally, and they've done a TV version of it. I'm trying to see what that one was called. Yeah, let's see. It's not mentioned here, I don't think. Kind of wish it was. Probably just check the developers' games. Yeah, because these are the former Darksiders developers. Let's see. Chronos Before the Ashes. That's what it was. Which was a first-person VR kind of thing, but ties into the universe. I don't know specifically how it plays into it plot-wise, but yeah. For that, which I don't think is on Xbox. I know it's on PlayStation as a PS4 game. Not, I don't think there's the VR version, but the VR version might be exclusive to like the Oculus or something. But but yeah, there you go. That's your little history on the Remnant games. But yeah, as Brandon said, Remnant 2 is on there. So you can check that out from earlier this year. And like the neat thing is that the campaigns are kind of interchangeable, and they remix things for everybody's campaign. I believe in Remnant 2, they even have different like puzzles and dungeons and such that can show up in your area. So there's a means for like replaying it with the alternate versions of these areas or the stuff that you didn't check out the first time, that kind of stuff. So that if you want to get the specialized loot and all that that's in there, that's a way to do that. So there you go for that. Also available now, there is, let's see, Spirit of the North for console and PC. This is a neat little environmental adventure game of sorts, where you're playing as a spirit fox that is going around these areas and solving puzzles and all that kind of stuff to kind of restore the land and figure out what happened to the civilization that used to live there, that kind of stuff. So that's a pretty neat one of those. SteamWorld Build also available. I mentioned that earlier. So there you go for that. Starting this week on December 5th, there's Clone Drone in the Danger Zone for PC and Xbox Series X and S. As they described here, a robot fox will slice them up.
Mm-hmm.
Or any part of your robot body can be sliced off. It seems like it's a multiplayer focused kind of game. Fight up to 15 players in Last Bot Standing, team up for online co-op, or face down the Robot Emperor in a story mode. So, okay, there's maybe a little bit of a campaign there. So that seems neat. Also, December 5th for console and PC is Rise of the Tomb Raider,
mm-hmm.
Which is the second game of the recent reboot trilogy. Supposedly the best one of those, so that's one to check out if you have not tried out any of the previous times it's been on the various subscription services or when it's been on sale.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Also December 5th, While the Iron's Hot. Let's see. This says it's an adventure game. You're the you're a journeyman blacksmith on a quest to become a master and restore a ruined village along the way. So maybe this is more of a Stardew Valley-ish kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says, while you might forge a few weapons on your journey, this isn't the kind of game where you wield them. The island's troubles can all be solved with your wits and crafting moxie. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you're crafting weapons for other people to use to solve problems. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That could be neat. And then, also December 5th, console and PC. World War Z Aftermath. This is the World War Z that came out a few years ago. Left 4 Dead style co-op shooting game, killing zombies and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Aftermath, I think, is a big update they put out to add a bunch more content to it in the past year or so. So there you go. You can check that out. We got a few more here. December 7th, Goat Simulator 3. That came out last fall,
mm-hmm.
in the middle of a bunch of other stuff, so you may have missed that, but you'll be able to check it out on Game Pass here on Thursday. December 8th for PC, Against the Storm.
Mm-hmm.
That's a dark fantasy city builder.
Yep.
So you can check that one out. December 12th, there's Tin Hearts for console and PC. It's a Lemmings-like puzzle game.
Mm-hmm.
I know they just released a VR version for the various headsets. So that could be pretty neat. That's been out for a while.
Mm.
And then the last one here, December 14th, console and PC, Far Cry 6. So you'll be able to check out the one of these that's kind of based on like a Cuba-like area.
Yeah, or like, Dominican Republic, something like that.
Yeah, with what's his face from Breaking Bad? But yeah, that's one you can check out. That's also on PS Plus Premium,
mm-hmm.
part of the Ubisoft stuff, so you can check it out on either of those.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like on December 6th, they're adding two games to Game Pass Core.
Mm.
That's the pared-down version of Game Pass with multiplayer, but like 25 games.
Mm-hmm.
That's Chivalry 2, the multiplayer melee game. And Totally Reliable Delivery Service. That's like one of those physics-y co-op games. You can check those out. Don't know if that's replacing other games or not. Mm. Maybe not, but there you go.
Mm.
Some solid stuff there.
Yep. Definitely.
And let's get to the rest of our news here.
Right.
We got... In a random tweet, Rockstar finally revealed exactly when the first trailer for the next Grand Theft Auto, presumed to be Grand Theft Auto 6.
Yep.
It'll be happening on Tuesday, December 5th, at 9 a.m. Eastern time,
mm-hmm.
6 a.m. Pacific, because yeah. screw people on the West Coast.
Yep.
And yeah, that's going to be neat to see. The imagery very much seems to be Vice City-like, so
mm-hmm.
I assume that is very much going to confirm the leak stuff that's been going on. So there you go for that.
Yeah.
We'll see if that's a substantial trailer, if it's like previous GTA reveal trailers where it's like 20 seconds and has a bunch of random stuff going on that people will dissect into 2-hour videos and whatnot on YouTube. So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. I'm certainly looking forward to it. And I know we're supposed to be getting it fairly early next year. So, or actually, I think we get it December next year. I don't remember. All I know is this GTA 6 is probably coming out and I'm excited. So,
yeah. Yeah. So maybe we'll get a date. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go for that. Also happening this week on Thursday, December 7th, Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis is coming to the PC.
Mm-hmm.
So you do not have to play it on PC or on mobile to check it out. So this newest means of getting a version of the original Final Fantasy VII story.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be free to play on Steam. And yeah, it's kind of taking the kind of the visual style from FF7 Remake and retelling chunks of the FF7 story in more digestible forms, I believe. But yeah, the epic storylines of the original Final Fantasy VII and Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII in episodic installments. So they'll tell Final Fantasy VII and then a prequel to Final Fantasy VII.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'll be interesting to check out. I played like 10 minutes of that and be like, yep, that's the start of the reactor stuff at the beginning of that game.
Mm-hmm.
But the combat's pretty different as you're kind of watching the ATB bar kind of fill up in chunks, and it opens up different things you can use on your action list, but it's not like a time. Like other Final Fantasy stuff, it's not turn-based, really,
the
way that you would think. So, but it's still a pretty neat way to experience that. Also happening this week on December 8th, the VR mode for Resident Evil 4 on the PS5 will finally be launching.
Mm.
They also have a free demo on that day of just that mode, so you can check that out. That'll be neat to see, so people will be able to play that game again with, in first person mode, with VR and all the weirdness that happens. So that's, I think you'll have to have a way to have a knife at all times, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that'll provide people more immersive way to even play through that game again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that could be cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, let's see what else here for next week. There's a neat looking game called Cookie Cutter. That is a hand-drawn Metroid-like game with a techno pop punk setting to it. It looks really neat.
Oh, yeah.
This is coming to PS5, Xbox Series, X and S, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
Looks really neat. I think this is part of the PC gaming showcase. So looks really neat. Really neat art style.
Oh yeah,
to it. They say inspired by Japanese manga, Quentin Tarantino films, and H.P. Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is a thing you could do. So yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Especially lots of gore to it.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, there you go for that. And that's it for the dates for this year.
Mm-hmm.
For stuff that's happening next year, Ultros, the very awesome art style Metroid-like that we got announced earlier this year, finally has a date for February 13th, 2024. Mm. They decided to announce that it's coming out in the middle of every other game that's coming out next year. There's a bunch of big games coming out in February, and they said, we want in on that action.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be on PS5, PS4, and PC. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Looks really neat. They're going to have a physical version you can get as well,
mm-hmm.
Which includes the full game, digital soundtrack and art book, digital or deluxe edition sleeve, exclusive magnets, 3 art cards, and a reversible art sheet. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's for the cover. So you can have a alternate cover if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But that has a really striking art style to it, kind of a psychedelic kind of art style to it that looks really neat.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious about that one. Yeah, kind mm-hmm. of has like a time loop kind of thing to it as well. So it's got some neat stuff going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, for February 22nd, I think that's the week before Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
This is Pacific Drive. That's finally got a date. That is the PS5 and PC kind of Pacific Northwest driving action game, roguelite thing, where you're driving in a big station wagon that you can kind of change the things you can bolt onto it to attack like zombies or whatever the heck is hanging out in the woods. Whatever mm-hmm. creatures. So much of a run-based game. Just has a very, very neat style and approach to it mm-hmm. For what it's doing. Looks really interesting. And that's another game in February that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Add it under the pile. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Also happening in February, there's no date on this just yet. Pennyblood, which... is the sort of spiritual successor to the I was just looking this up. From the studio that made what is it? I was trying to figure this out the other day. Let me see what the news is here. Yeah, Shadow Hearts people.
Right.
The big game that they're making. They did a double Kickstarter campaign with the devs that made the Wild Arms games.
Mm-hmm.
So Pennyblood, they're making a spin-off game, a roguelike companion game called mm-hmm. Pennyblood Hellbound.
Yeah.
That is going to be releasing in February. Mm-hmm. It's like a side thing. Backers will get the game itself, but they'll also be getting a closed beta version featuring around 10 hours of gameplay that will mm-hmm. be coming out here on December 14th. So they'll get that next week. Which will include me, so that'll be cool. I'll check that out. But yeah, that's not much in the way of detail, just they're doing another thing as well with a developer I think they're partnering with. So that could be neat. We still haven't really seen too much of what else they're doing just yet. They've been putting out updates every month of like what they're doing dev-wise, but yeah. Mm-hmm. They do have an update roadmap for this game, as they're going to keep updating it throughout the year. So,
yeah.
That seems like that'll be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like an isometric kind of view there for that kind of roguelike action game. So, that could be pretty solid. So, yeah, there's that. And then, the Capcom held a big showcase this past week for Dragon's Dogma 2.
Mm-hmm.
Which very much seemed like, well, if they're going to announce a date, this is probably going to be it.
Yeah.
And they definitely did that. They talked about the game as well and announced it'll be out March 22nd. So mm-hmm. finally a game that said, what if we release after February?
Yeah.
What if we don't release alongside dozens of other games?
Oh, yeah.
And so Capcom very much seemed to figure a good idea for that. So. Mm-hmm. They're good for that. That'll be out March 22nd. I think it's going to be Capcom's first $70 game.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be paying a premium for this, and they're expecting it to do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
After the tepid success of the original, maybe more so when they did the PS4 and Xbox One versions
mm-hmm.
With updated graphics and that to look better and run better, so... but yeah, I think this one will be the one that kind of puts it over the top and does pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
If you have not played it, it's kind of if you merged elements of Monster Hunter and like Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You're kind of hunting down these larger creatures, and you can grab onto them to attack weak spots and such. And it's kind of provides a unique kind of combat experience to it that there definitely wasn't at the time that it came out.
No. At that point, like you said, it was Shadow of really had you like climbing on enemies, and it was especially a thing you did with like the larger enemies, because they would have like certain parts of their body that would like take more damage. So like there'd be like a huge ogre, and you'd want to climb up to like behind its neck because you could stab it from there. Stuff like that. Yeah. I remember a bunch of stuff about that game. I remember how, in hindsight, like the plot was kind of a throwaway plot, but the gameplay was so fun, I didn't really care. Yeah. I also remembered the fact that the game's like quote unquote romance feature was so broken when it first came out that it was really easy to accidentally romance the wrong person. But yeah, it was. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Yep. Hopefully they'll put out a demo or something for people to check out.
Yeah.
But also, it's probably a pretty good time to go get the first game. It's constantly on sale for like $5 on every storefront.
Yep.
So it's worth checking that out and, you know, playing it and seeing how that does for you in 2023.
Definitely.
Versus what it was like probably about 10 years ago.
Yep.
Which was a very different landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Where like all you had for like weird Japanese games that the general public was like, oh, there's those Souls games, but those are way too hard for any of us normies to check out.
Mm-hmm.
Monster hadn't even really even broken out in the West yet.
Mm-mm.
So yeah,
that'd take a pandemic for that.
Well, no, that was Monster Hunter World that kind of broke it for people's. They got to play it on a proper console and not have to.
Oh right,
figure out how to. You know, finagle 3DS into playing that or playing it on a Wii U.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Figure out how to make it work on a PSP.
Mm-hmm.
You know, devices that weren't made for that kind of weird game.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, we got a few stories here of delays.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of those got announced.
Demon's School.
The new Necrosoft game that is sort of a an homage to the original kind of Persona games, Persona 1 and 2.
The old, you mean, yeah, the original Persona, also bits of, you know, the original Digital Devil, Megami Tensei.
Yeah. Where that first game especially was like a game that did not believe in balancing XP.
Well, that's also because that original game was... It was more of an experiment when it first came, when the first one was. They kind of did better with the second one. Yeah. Not that you would know it, because they butchered the localization for the first one.
Yeah. I remember playing that and the character died, and it was like, oh, they're just going to be behind in XP for the rest of the game.
Yep.
That sucked. But either way, this one, I assume, will not have those kind of issues, but... that is going to was supposed to be out later this year, which is rapidly shutting. They're announcing it'll be likely be out in Q2 2024, so sometime in the late spring to early summer. Whenever it does launch, it'll be out on PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. So you'll be able to check that out at some points and maybe see if there's still a demo out there playable. I think I have that on Xbox and have not started up yet, but has a really cool art style to it and all that, so yeah, looking forward to that whenever it's ready to be released. So for the other delays, Level 5 had an event where they essentially announced delays or dates for games that are further out than you would have thought. There's Deca Police, which is their crime suspense RPG that just had 2023.
Yeah.
It's now just 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're definitely not getting out in the next few weeks
mm-hmm.
For that. So there's that. There's Fantasy Life I, The Girl Who Steals Time. mm-hmm. which we did talk about recently as being delayed into 2024. Where they're like, oh, we'll announce a date soon, and it seems that date is summer 2024,
mm-hmm.
which is not a date. That's a season.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing I think Japanese developers do all the time, where they talk about release dates, but what they mean is a time frame.
Yeah.
They just use that interchangeably, and it's like, no, yeah. that's not how that works.
Yeah.
Release date is a specific date, a specific mm-hmm. day that you're releasing it. But hey, it'll be out in the summer, which is later than I would have thought.
Yeah.
That's because they said they would have a date instead of a season they'll be out. But
mm-hmm.
hopefully it hits that. We'll see.
Yeah.
They've got literally a handful of games that they're working on. I don't know how they're expecting to get all these out in the time frame they are.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's Inazuma 11 Victory Road that mm-hmm. was supposed to be out this year as well. Mm-hmm. And obviously got delayed next year, just 2024. They did say they're going to have a worldwide beta test demo for the Switch version mm-hmm. in March. So you'll be able to check that out and play it a bit early and test it out.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a soccer RPG
yeah.
franchise. And yeah, this new version is coming to PS5, PS4, Switch, iOS, and Android. So
yeah.
that'll be on some extra platforms there. And the last one, Professor Layton and the New World of Steam. We've yep. literally seen just a teaser of, I think it was just the professor mm-hmm. walking around in kind of a steampunk world.
Yeah.
That was it. No date or anything.
Mm.
Now they've given it a time frame of releasing in 2025.
Yeah. I mean, I'm good. I'm as long as it comes out, I'm happy. You know, I've been wanting to play another Professor Layton game for a while, so.
Yeah. It takes place in Steam Bison America.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. They're not too concerned about real places, except for, I think, they do some stuff in London.
Yeah.
That's where the professor is from.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like, I would not be surprised if this comes out later than that, in 2026 mm-hmm. maybe. In that case, they'd probably just release on the Switch successor instead of the Switch. Because mm-hmm. really, who's going to keep releasing Switch games that mm-hmm. late if we assume the new one's coming out next year? I don't know, maybe, but there you go. That's your level 5 news. They announced that none of these games are coming out at a specific date, just maybe next year or the year after mm. that, or maybe next summer. Who knows? But yeah, there you go for that.
Yeah. And that Decapolis actually looks pretty interesting as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could definitely get into this. This is yeah. right up my alley. But unfortunately, it's not coming out till next year, so we'll have to yeah. wait a little bit.
Yep, so there you go for that. They'll get to the weirdest story of the week. Ubisoft, there's been rumors that they were working on a Beyond Good and Evil remaster for the 20th anniversary of that game.
Yeah.
They've been literally been talking about Beyond Good and Evil 2 for 15 years.
Yep.
As of this year. They, yep. teased it in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
I was literally re-listening to the early Giant Bombcast episodes, and literally their first episode as the Giant Bombcast is them talking about Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they've literally been talking about this since Giant Bomb's website has existed.
They have been talking about it. Still have
not released it.
They've been talking about it through basically like almost two and a half presidential administrations.
Yeah.
Like, that's how long they've been talking about it.
It's like, we're getting to Duke Nukem Forever territory, except
mm-hmm.
those devs had at least a good reason, because they were upgrading engines constantly
mm-hmm.
as new engines came out that they could use.
Mm.
Whereas this just seems like nobody's been able to push it over the edge to, a complete game,
mm-hmm.
to a solid idea for a complete game, but the first game's still pretty good. That was very much a Zelda-like, but instead of focusing solely on like combat and adventure stuff, you have a bunch of photo-taking stuff for like photojournalism stuff. And yeah, that got a release on like XBLA and PSN a couple generations ago. That did it really well. It kind of let it do a lot better because that original game bombed hard. So much so it was sold for 10. They just said, we need to get this out of here as fast as possible. But apparently they decided to, instead of announce this thing, it just showed up as part of the Ubisoft's Connect subscription service, Ubisoft Plus, whatever that's called. That got access to it, despite it not being announced yet and not being finished. So they got like a beta version of this game that they could play for a little bit before Ubisoft realized what happened and took it away from them. And it's like, that's the weirdest thing I've seen in a while. It's not like somebody came into contact of somebody that had a copy of the game or whatever. So the Beyond Good and Evil Twitter account, which is BGE Game, which has the title Beyond Good and Evil 2. Like, that's the thing that's going to happen instead of, like, the new game. So they just announced officially Beyond Good and Evil 20th Anniversary Edition. It'll be out early next year. Yeah, have support for 4K visuals, 60 FPS support, improved graphics, controls, audio, new autosave and cross-save features. So that's good to see. A lot of good stuff there. Yeah, it's a game people should definitely check out if they had not played originally.
It is. It is legitimately an amazing game. It is really hard to describe. It is very much in like a French science fiction mold, because French sci-fi always tends to be really, really out there a lot, pretty much most of the time. And in this case, that's Beyond Good and Evil pretty much to a T. The game is like this extremely odd combination of like stealth and photography, and there's not a lot of combat there. I will be honest, though, the control mechanics for the combat aren't really all that good, which is fortunate because it's really a small part of the game. But it's also got like a bunch of other things to it too. Like there's, you know, there's like boating and like shooter aspects that show up. There's like a table hockey mini game, just all this stuff. They somehow managed to just pack so much good concepts and ideas in a single game and somehow managed to pull it all off. And on top of all that, it's got this really like off the wall, like reggaeton soundtrack.
Yeah,
it's pretty neat.
Especially being a prominent game where you play as a female protagonist that was not super common at that point.
Well, I mean, you had Lara Croft, but yeah, pretty much.
And she wasn't, you know, in sexy outfits or anything.
No, she looked like a normal person. I mean, she did have a midriff and everything, but that's also kind of normal anyway. She also doesn't say like a single word throughout the whole game. She's completely silent. But yeah, that whole game, it's like the biggest flaw of that game is the fact that they have never actually made a proper sequel, even though they've been talking about it for 15 some odd years now. If you do get the chance, play the game. It's an amazing game. Obviously the game is 20 years old, so, you know, some parts of it are going to definitely look aged, but it still holds up pretty much the rest of it. Now, maybe with this shit coming out, maybe they'll finally start talking about the sequel.
Sure.
Maybe.
But yeah. There you go. They're at least talking about control improvements and all that kind of stuff, so hopefully we'll get to see that in action. Maybe that's a game, you know, be at the Game Awards. I assume they wouldn't pull anything now that they've had to, you know, officially announce it, but yeah, very would be very neat, especially if there's a date tied to that for when to check out. Just as long as it's not February. Just don't release it there. We'll get to the last story here of the show. And also a weird story, but not necessarily a unique story. Bethesda has apparently been responding to negative Steam reviews for Starfield to, like, correct people that are saying things. And marketing, it seems like a lot of the messaging is, which is just weird, which is, you know, Steam reviews, much like a lot of reviews across the internet on, you know, commerce websites, you know, they can respond and say normal things like, oh, sorry, you're having this experience, you know, send us an email to this address and we can look at, you know, doing an exchange for a new one, you know, replacement, that kind of stuff. Like, those are all fine, that kind of stuff. But being a developer of a game and being like, you know, essentially having the, you know, marketing version of, no, you're wrong about this, and this is why. And you're just coming off as like ad speak is just kind of weird. It's like the one of them here. Let's see that. Yeah, I think somebody talking about loading times and how much loading there is in a game, which there isn't a ton, but it's definitely, you know, enough where you can be annoyed by that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they respond, you can take time to explore various planets for resources and items. You can also break the law by smuggling and selling contraband, build your own outposts and starships, and customize them to your enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Exploration and role-playing, there are many things to do and explore. Mm-hmm. One is from a review that said, midfield, which feels like the equivalent of firing off a pre-written takedown of someone calling you cringe on main. Yeah, even some of the stuff where people have like reasonable complaints about like load times and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these replies, yeah, point players to the game's official Discord server to help them find further ideas from other players, which is not exactly something you want to be told. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to interact with the community, you can probably figure it out. But if you're just writing a review on Steam, you're just, you know, saying what you think about the game for other people to, you know, learn from.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, let's see. Yeah, the one for the loading screens. While there may be loading screens in between fast traveling, just consider the amount of data for the expansive gameplay that is procedurally generated to load flawlessly in under 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that shortcoming will not hinder our players from getting lost in the world we created.
Mm.
It's like, what does that add to anything?
Yeah.
That's just an ad.
Mm.
Yeah, see, a separate reply from the developer also puts forward the idea that fast travel has its perks.
Mm-hmm.
Since you'll always be given a visual of your ship launching and landing, thus being able to appreciate all the little details, make your customized ship look unique. Mm. And customize your own loading screen. That's the rebuttal. And the same response, the developer also reuses the "that's not boring" line.
Mm.
So that's a whole thing. And it's like, you know what's the kind of the annoying thing is having to see like your character get up and sit down on the seats for several seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you go to control your ship. And same as for landing and taking off.
Mm.
It's like you talk about how much data it's loading. How much if you don't load those animations? That'd be a good bit faster. That kind of stuff. But yeah, it's the sort of thing that people have been kind of just finding very weird, especially when it's not really addressing things that like saying like, oh, we got an update coming up that's going to be addressing this, so stay tuned on that. Like, that would be at least something useful. Versus these things that are very much like, oh, the, you know, they wanted the community team to put these kind of statements out there that are all just like marketing to counteract these reviews that are not, maybe there's some that are nasty, but the ones they're talking about here seem to be pretty valid complaints and such. Cool. That it's like, this is what you do when you've lost the plot on what you're,
yeah,
what you want the vibes around your game to be.
Yeah.
And somebody is telling these people to go do this stuff that just seems very cringy and shitty to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because at a certain point, you just, you know, put your head down and let the developers update the game and, you know, address issues that are out there and just deal with the things that are out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it normally is. But yeah, I saw that they've done this with previous games. It's not necessarily a hugely new thing, though I don't think this article particularly talks about it. But it's something that's not a big surprise from this studio.
Mm-hmm.
That it's also just weird when... Oh, yeah, they've been doing it with Fallout 76, and I guess still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a weird thing, because that game's turned around pretty decently. But yeah, there's... They linked to a reply here from November 23rd. So, a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's the kind of thing. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, you kind of have to let it go. And, you know, maybe reply to ones that you can be constructive about with, like, letting people know, like, there's an update that, you know, addresses this or there will be one.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a fun thing. To see out of a big corporation now that they're part of Microsoft, where it's like, being part of Microsoft means like this kind of shit shouldn't be happening.
Because mm-hmm.
as far as I know, Microsoft isn't doing that with people that are reviewing their games on Steam, but I don't know, maybe they are. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I don't go look at those games on Steam.
Yeah.
Because they're on Game Pass, and I don't look at the reviews for that stuff.
Nope.
So, yep, there you go. There's your weird Bethesda story for a bit, but yeah, that's going to do it for the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
We will be co-streaming the Game Awards on Thursday, which I had to look up like when it started.
Yeah.
And I still don't know if the time I got, first off, they don't show a time at all on the website. There's a story, a news story that's hanging off the page that's, has it in there if you click on it. But I just clicked on the add to calendar thing that, you know, nobody wants to do in 2023. Mm-hmm. But that said, 7:30 Eastern time. I'm confused if that's going to be a pre-show before it starts at 8, but they don't mention a pre-show.
Mm-hmm.
But all the Keighley stuff has a pre-show, so
yeah,
I'm assuming that's not going to be when the show proper. That's probably when they'll give away some of the awards that aren't going to be on the main show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's weird. But we'll be going live. They say it's going to go to 11, so like 3.5 hours of show of some sort. So we'll be talking over that, doing some fun stuff, and seeing what stories come out of that show.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's going to be that. And then we'll be heading through the last few weeks of the year as we work on our Game of the Year stuff and probably not do a show on the 24th or the 31st, since those are holidays.
Nope. Yep.
We may
and
do.
I won't be here anyway.
Yeah. We may do some early shows or something. Who knows? But, well, no. Actually, we'll probably just do our Game of the Year podcast on the 7th. I just look at the schedule and be like, yeah, that's going to fuck things up, but we'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out and select strangers that are also looking forward to the Game Awards and seeing games that won't be out in February.
Nope. Or probably not at all next year.
Yeah. But yeah, let's see. Yeah, thank you to Brandon for joining this week.
Always.
Yeah, as I said, we'll be back next week with a new slate of news, which will be chock full of Game Awards stuff. And we'll be back next time. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.